Committee on Rules and Elections will come to order. I'm assuming you're all here about the commemoration of Welch's.
I thought we were going to see the redo of the Super Bowl.
That was good.
At this time, I'm going to open a public hearing. Actually, let me just explain for a second. We've got some members that are here to testify on HCR 5, which commemorates the 100th anniversary of the city of Gresham and designates February 11th as City of Gresham Day. We're going to get that business out of the way so that they don't have to wait, and then we're going to get into everybody. So I hope that you'll extend the members that courtesy. Thank you. I'm going to open a public hearing on HCR 5. If my committee administrator would... I guess we don't need to, since I just read exactly what it does.
It's a commemorative for the 100th anniversary of Gresham and designates February 11th as City of Gresham Day.
Thank you. Wanting to testify on this bill would be Senator Mona Sanderson, if you'd like to come forward. Absolutely.
Yes.
If Representative Lim would like to join you, that's entirely...
Mind if I ask my internal to join me?
Listen, if anybody that you guys want to come on up, why don't we just start it that way? Here, Senator, I tell you, you just take the gavel. Now that's respect.
Where's the mayor?
Be careful what you wish for in this building. Welcome, you guys. Thank you for being here today.
Should I go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. I'm Senator Lori Monis Anderson. I am so happy that you are hearing this bill. I grew up in Gresham, and back in the 40s and 50s, and for the last 60 years, Gresham was just a small town. That was before child labor laws. We were able to, it was a farming community, lots of raspberries and beans and strawberries, and I missed that. We would go out in the berry fields at the age of 8 years old and pick berries and earn money, and we only had two schools, West Gresham Grade School and Gresham High School. And now Gresham Barlow District has 17 schools by itself. We have Reynolds School District. We have Centennial School District. So I have seen tremendous change in Gresham, and I love Gresham. I love the simple life that we had back then. Life is far more complicated now, but I love Gresham now, too. It's a thriving metropolis, and the 100-year birthday is coming up, and I'm just wanted this body to say, hey, Gresham is a great place to live, a great place to have developed business, economic development, et cetera, and I will end it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Senator, for taking the time to be here. It means a lot. Representative?
Thank you. Chair Kitts and a member of the committee, and I'm sorry that the Gresham is not Welch.
Thank you, Senator. Now Representative.
I lived in Gresham area more than last 30 years. This is a great city. And especially, thank you very much, Chair and the members of the committee, hearing of this HCR 5. I didn't have a chance to go to school in Gresham, but all my children did. And it is a great city of economic development and education, and a city of good families. This Friday, City of Gresham will be celebrating its 104th day. And to prepare for this, my district is organizing many celebrations and public events throughout this week. To help celebrate this special day, and I'm asking for your support for the HCR 5, which would commemorate 100th birthday of Gresham and designate February 11 as a City of Gresham Days. And thank you very much for your consideration. And so my intern like to also testify in a couple of minutes.
Chair Kitts and members of the committee, my name is Chantel Christensen. I am an intern for Representative John Lim. I moved to Gresham from Seattle, Washington 10 years ago. I'm 19 now. And so the past 10 years I've lived there, and I just love it. I absolutely love Gresham. That's why we moved. That's the city we chose to move to when we moved to Oregon, because of how awesome the community is and how just it's wonderful. So I think it would be a great resolution to pass. And you know what? Everyone has birthdays. Why not give the city a birthday party? That would be awesome if we could have a day specifically for Gresham. That would just be, I think a lot of Gresham citizens would really appreciate that, especially ones like Lori Montes Anderson who have grown up there. I think it would be great. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you for coming here today. Bruce, did you want to say a few words?
I do. thank you, Mr. Chair. Bruce Anderson with Speaker Karen Minnis' office. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. We also want to just lend our, the Speaker would like to lend her support to HCR 5. Speaker Minnis has had the privilege and honor of representing parts of Gresham with Senator, now Senator Montes Anderson over the years, and now Representative John Lim. She's very pleased to be able to join with them in bringing this resolution forward. Gresham is an incredibly vibrant community, and it played a lot. As you look back at this resolution, as well as some of the research we did on the area of Gresham, it's played a valuable role in the history of this state. And this is a great way to be able to recognize a community whose 100th anniversary is a significant event. And so we're looking forward to that occurring this Friday and Saturday up in our area. And we'd appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Seeing no further people willing to or wishing to testify on this, I am going to close the public hearing on HCR 5, and I'm going to immediately open a work session on HCR 5.
May I make a motion?
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HCR 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher moves HCR 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I just like the question. Has anybody heard whether Beaverton's attempting to annex Gresham? Well, maybe not.
Is there any other discussion?
How about a county of Gresham?
with great reservation, Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm only sorry that Mayor Becker couldn't be here to join you, and I'm more than happy to support this resolution.
Right. And just for clarification, I don't think that Representative Montes Anderson was in Gresham in the 30s or the 40s. I mean, she's just referring to pictures.
I thought it was since 1905.
Well, she was born in 1973, so come on. With that, folks, the clerk will please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Chair votes aye. With that, the committee will move to move the bill to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Thank you guys for being here.
Happy birthday,
Gresham.
Mr. Chair, can I carry the bill?
Representative Lim would be honored to have you carry the bill.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
With that, I see that our distinguished guest is here. I would like to open up the informational meeting on the administration of Oregon election laws, and please invite our very own Secretary of State, Bill Bradbury. Welcome, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here.
Appreciate your time.
I'm getting used to this new furniture. Thank you, Chair Kitz and members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And I particularly appreciate the opportunity to be here today to share with you some of my views about the election we just had in Oregon, and perhaps a bit about a little background about some of the legislation that you're likely to see this session. First, I just really would like to briefly review the election situation in Oregon and talk about how we're doing. And I think the short answer is that we are doing very well with elections in Oregon. In fact, in the last election, we had one of the highest turnouts in the nation, and in fact it was the third highest in the nation, with 86.5% of the registered voters expressing their views. We also had a record number of registered voters. We now have over 2 million registered voters in the state of Oregon. And thanks to vote by mail, we did not have people standing in line in the freezing rain for hours just so they could vote, which we saw in this election in some other places in this country. And unlike other states, we did not have allegations about voter fraud or lawsuits over counting the vote. We really came through, vote by mail came through really, really strong and clear. And I think most of us would agree that this was the most closely observed election in this country's history. And vote by mail very clearly proved itself as a very effective technique. As a result, it was very interesting. We're seeing counties and states all over the country asking our advice about setting up vote by mail in their states, and groups are proposing national efforts to institute it in the country. And I just got back from the National Association of Secretaries of State's meeting in Washington, D.C., where it's fascinating to see the change that's taken place in the last 4 years, because the secretaries are recognizing that vote by mail increases turnout, creates a paper record of the election, and solves a lot of the problems they had with very crowded polling places. And so it's very interesting to see us all of a sudden having a great deal more national attention. And I got to say that I think we owe the 36 county elections officials and the offices, their county elections offices, a huge debt of thanks and appreciation, and I know a number of them are here today, and I hope you will hear from them later, because it's very clear that they are the implementers of our election system, and they made it work beautifully, and we can all be really proud of how that went out. But we're not just resting on our laurels. The OCVR, which stands for the Oregon Central Voter Registration Project, is on time and it's on budget. And we are one of only four states that didn't have OCVR in place when the federal legislation requiring it passed. And we're one of only four states, well, there were a lot more states that don't have OCVR, but we're one of only four states that are actually going to meet the federal deadlines and have OCVR in place in the first federal election in 2006, the primary election in 2006. So we're feeling really good about that as well. Our six pioneer counties are going to run pilot operations later this year, working with OCVR, and the full rollout of OCVR will be ready, as I said, for the 2006 primary election. Now, centralized voter registration clearly prevents, helps prevent ballot fraud, and it's going to eliminate double ballots and problems like that. In fact, in 2006, Oregon will have the cleanest voter rolls in the country. That's what OCVR is going to give us. It's going to give us, and that and vote by mail together are going to give us the cleanest voter rolls in the country, because no one will be registered in more than one county, and no vote will be counted that shouldn't be counted. But there's still some things left to do with legislation to move things forward. Really, the problems that we did see in the last election had more to do with voter registration cards and paid signature gatherers. So we proposed a few bills that could close some of the gaps in our statutes. For example, we want to extend the ban on pay per signature that currently exists for initiative petitions. We want to extend that ban to voter registration cards and nominating petitions. We saw last year that the what we call the bounty hunter syndrome caused a lot of problems, and it caused some very real misconduct.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. When you talk about nominating petitions, would that be in reference to like what we saw with the Nader?
That would be in reference to the Nader petition.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. That was really the only big statewide nominating petition we had last year. Now, perhaps the most topical of our legislative priorities is the result of last year's bipartisan blue ribbon panel study on campaign finance disclosure laws. Senate Bill 160 encapsulates the recommendations of four former Oregon Secretaries of State, Mark Hatfield, Barbara Roberts, Phil Kiesling, and Norma Paulus. This really outstanding group of individuals worked on a panel that called for the Secretary of State to introduce disclosure legislation, and I have done just that, and hopefully you will see it sometime during this legislative session. Among other changes that the proposal makes, it calls for continuous web-based electronic reporting of campaign finance transactions. Basically, you'd fill out a TurboTax-like online form instead of the complex, infrequent reports that we currently require. It would basically be a web-based system of continuous reporting. Now, this would make it, it would do two things. It would make it easier to file, and it would eliminate very simple clerical and deadline errors. I mean, if you have the computer program online, it does the adding for you. You don't make those mistakes. And it would give more transparency to the elections process. It would also make it easier for all those small PACs that rarely have any activity. And if you don't have any activity under a continuous reporting system, you don't report it. It's really just that simple. And so that's a significant reform we want to pursue this session. Now, the last major legislative priority we have for elections is asking the legislature to come up with $700,000 in matching funds for the nearly $18 million of federal money that's sitting in the federal treasury right now with Oregon's name on it as to implement the HAVA, the Help America Vote Act projects that we're required to do. It's just sitting there waiting for us to claim it, and it's earning the federal government interest that could go instead to Oregon while it sits waiting. We just need to claim our money as soon as possible. So that's a very brief preview of the issues that we will be bringing before you this session. I know that there are other things that you may want to talk over today, so let me just thank you again for this opportunity to appear before you and ask for your help in improving Oregon's election system. Thank you very much, and whatever you desire, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions if that's what you desire.
If that's okay, I know your time.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine.
is okay. Well, thank you again for being here, and I think that's a great thumbnail sketch of the overview of some of the, you know, the proposals that you put forward, and greatly appreciative. I've had a chance to look at some of those. The committee's had a chance to look at some of those, and I would assume, being the chairman of that committee, that this committee will be taking action on a lot of those in the very, very near future. So, thank you. With that being said, I'm open to any questions for the secretary that we might have. So, Representative Greenlick first, then Representative Holby.
Bill, thank you very much for being here. I have two questions, if I may, Mr. Chair. First, now that we have vote by mail and we have a centralized registration system, why do we have the ballots going back to the county rather than to a centralized process as we would if we were any other corporation trying to bring back 2 million pieces of mail?
The reason you have it go back to the counties is because, as you all know, the ballots are, I mean, counties produce a large number of different ballots, and they have their system set up to be able to count them. So it really makes sense to maintain that system, because you've got so many different ballot styles, and they're responsible for getting those printed and out and then back and counted accurately.
You follow up?
I still don't think I'd run 36 branch offices if I were running a central system. The other thing I'm sure you've watched with interest, what's happened north of the border here.
Yes.
And watched the with current great circumstances interest. of a recount where, 100-plus votes determined a race. Have you had a chance to look at, fine-tune, review our recount system in Oregon? Are you comfortable with where it is?
Well,
I know their system's different. The question is, could we withstand that kind of a recount?
It would take us a long time. Anytime you have almost 3 million votes cast and the difference between the two candidates is 120 votes, I don't care what system you use, it's going to take a long time to get the answer. And we saw that 4 years ago with the election of president between the difference between Al Gore and George Bush was, my recollection was it was, 6,000 votes. And that delayed our final, you know, knowing whether we were a red or a blue state for, I think it was somewhere around 15 days. I feel very good about our recount procedures. And I love the fact that Oregon requires a hand recount. Now, what that means is you have to have a paper ballot to count. And it is emerging very clearly nationally that that is a very excellent standard to have to prevent the kinds of software, the kinds of software manipulation that people get very concerned about. Paper ballots are a great record of each person's vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would just to interrupt, not interrupt, but cut in if I may. With the recount procedure that we've talked about, preemptively, is there anything this committee can do or look at? I mean, obviously, when problems arise, as they did in Washington State or in Florida, which I happened to be down there for all 36 days, and what seemed to be happening in Florida is the defining of election law, the defining of ballots as the game went on both sides.
Right.
I don't think prior to those 36 days anybody in this room had heard of a dimpled Chad, a pregnant Chad, a hanging Chad, a mispunched Chad, because it was, I mean, these sorts of things, preemptively, and if you don't have an answer now, that's fine, but preemptively, is there anything this committee could do to ensure that we don't have a Florida or a Washington State? Or are you just completely comfortable that if that situation were to happen in Oregon, that we could handle it?
Well, I'm completely comfortable we'll never look like Florida looked 4 years ago.
Are you saying a Republican will never get that close to a Democrat?
No, I'm not. Actually, no.
It's a good idea.
What I'm saying is that the state of Oregon is now a punch card free zone.
Okay.
So that's A. But B, I'd like to introduce John Lindback, who's our elections director. I think we have substantial processes in place for recount and the use of election boards, which are bipartisan, to review ballots to basically decide, you know, okay, we're a voter intent state, so we want to make sure that every voter's vote is counted if it's at all possible to determine what that voter meant. And we have processes in place to do that in the recount.
I can help with that if you need, you know.
You can help the intent.
The intent part.
Then it would be you and I.
They had no intention of voting Republican.
They don't know what they did.
Chair Katz on the committee.
John, can you say your name?
Yeah, I'm John Lindback. I'm director of the Elections Division in the Secretary of State's office. After the 2000 election, because of that very messy-looking recount in Florida, virtually every state in the nation reviewed its recount procedures, including Oregon. And all of these fine people behind us here, the county clerks and the Secretary of State's office, worked together to review those procedures. And we do have detailed procedures in place. Now, that's not to say that it contemplates every single situation that can come along, because we find with every election that our laws and rules, no matter how complete we try to make them, that something comes along that we have never seen before. And that's how election law gets written. We look at the last election and see what strange thing came up, and then we come forward and propose changes. And we have a good example of that, what the Secretary just talked about. And that was the mess we ran into last year with people being paid in voter registration drives. That was the thing in the last election cycle that was not contemplated by our laws. I think that I have talked with elections officials from the state of Washington and asked them if they would be willing, after the dust settles on their litigation, to meet with us, to talk to us about the lessons learned there, so that we can determine whether some of the things that they learned in their recount process up there would be applicable in Oregon, and that we could learn from them and adjust our procedures here as a result. And they are willing to do that, but we need to let the dust settle on their litigation, because when you're getting sued, it's like really hard to talk publicly.
Sure. I think there might be some legal issues there.
It would be very useful if they could talk to us as well at that same time.
Okay.
No, I mean, if they were here talking about it, it would be very helpful.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to invite them, you know, when that discussion occurs, if you could inform the committee of either, you know, when the discussion will be held, if you'd like to do it in front of the committee, you know, if relevant or prudent, we'd love to have you. Representative Holby, I think you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Secretary, I have a question concerning the Help America Vote Act. Can you give me a brief description of that act and its requirements, and whether Oregon is bound by that act, and what happens if the legislature doesn't give you the give your office the $700,000 to be able to access those matching funds, and what position that puts the state of Oregon in down the road?
Let me answer that last question first, and that is that if we don't get $700,000 to match the $18 million of federal money, we won't have the money to finish the centralized voter registration system. And federal law requires us to have a centralized voter registration system, so the legislature will then, under federal mandate, have to spend $3.5 million. So, now, what was the first part of the question?
That pretty much cut to the chase. I just kind of wanted to know what the implications were there, and I think you described it quite well.
You did ask what are the general requirements of HAVA, and I want John to add some to this, but basically there were some initial things that basically HAVA required face out of punch cards. HAVA requires every state to have a centralized voter registration system. HAVA requires every state to really provide for the disabled community to be able to vote privately and independently. And there's some other things that I'm not even remembering in terms of voter education and the like. Do you want to add to that?
Well, the most notable one that other states are struggling with is that it requires voting machines. If you have polling place elections in your state, it requires you to use voting machines that signal to the voter whether or not they may have made an error or not on their ballot. And so if we were to return to polling place elections in Oregon in a federal election, we would have to go. We would have to purchase all new voting machines for every precinct in our state in order to use, in order to have a polling place election that had a federal candidate on it or a federal issue.
Could I interrupt you just for a minute?
Yeah.
Just to be clear here, the errors we're talking about are not who you vote for. The errors we're talking about is like in a specific race for Congress, you vote for both candidates. You overvote or you undervote. That's that the equipment now has to highlight that too in a polling place election.
Mr. Secretary, yeah. And to clarify, if someone did vote for two candidates, if you need my help to determine their intent, I'm here for you.
Okay.
Chair, can I answer your question?
That's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, he's got some more.
If I could just add one more thing. That's one of the reasons why we have so many states out there with a sort of renewed interest in vote by mail, because HAVA requires, if you are a vote by mail state, HAVA requires you to do an education program that instructs the voters how to examine their ballot, make sure they don't have any mistakes on the ballot, and if they do, request a replacement ballot. And you'll probably notice some of that effort that we made in the last election. We were doing that to sort of prove to the federal government that we were complying with the Help America Vote Act. That was our responsibility under the Act. But if you do polling place elections, all of a sudden you've got to come up with all of that that voting technology that's quite pricey at the polling place.
Mr. Secretary, I know that Representative Thatcher has a question. I wanted to follow up just very briefly with regards to the $18 million that the state would get. You said a percentage of that money would be used to finish the centralized voter system. The extra money that we would have, would an applicable use of that money to be to, as you said, go to a web-based reporting system for contributions and expenditures report? Could that money be used in theory for implementing something like that as well?
Turn this question over to John.
Well, we've been hopeful of that, and we're going to be contacting the Elections Assistance Commission in D.C., the federal commission that's been created to assist states in implementing the act, to try and make a determination on that. We don't have a final answer, but we have been hopeful of that up to this point.
Great. I think that ties in with the speaker and the minority leader's press conference today of right. Ultimately trying to put in some parameters so that in light of recent events we don't see these same cracks in the existing system. But obviously in this day and age funding is an issue, so if you could report back to the committee upon your findings there ASAP, I think the committee would very much like to go in that direction. It's just the funding is the issue, so thank you for that. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, and thank you for being here and spending your time here with us. I've had some concerns raised towards me, and it's been brought up to me that perhaps there isn't a witness when voter intent is to be determined and the enhancement process takes place, and if that's not required, why isn't it, and what kind of integrity would you... I mean, that seems like kind of a loop or a hole, if that's... Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, very good question. Voter intent is only determined by an election board, which consists of several members on the election board. It's very much a bipartisan board, requires requires at least one Democrat and one Republican on it, and they have to agree, essentially, before any voter intent is. So in other words, you're looking at a ballot, and somebody marks the ballot with a big X and then scribbles it out and then points an arrow at the other one and says, I meant to mark vote for this. Probably people could pretty much agree what that person intended. And that's the, I mean, they both have to agree before that vote, you know, is, that ballot is what's called enhanced.
Follow up?
Yes, and I guess anecdotally, you hear stories of, well, this person voted Republican all the way down the line for all these other candidates, but they looks like they missed this person. I think they must have meant to vote Republican here. Is that something that comes up? Okay, I'd like to hear that.
Sometimes
I don't like either candidate.
Yeah.
No.
I purposely don't vote for either.
Yeah, Representative Thatcher, we have guidelines on voter intent in our vote by mail manual, which the counties are required to follow. And we have, I believe, 34 of the 36 county clerks here could probably give you anecdotal stories about the kinds of situations that they've run into in various elections on determining voter intent. But we've gone over those procedures with the clerks and worked those out and tried to reflect them as closely as possible in our vote by mail manual, so that all counties are doing it in the same way.
Representative Dalto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Secretary Harry.
Great. Good
nice
to see you.
See you. Yeah, I just had a question about a comment you made earlier about the bounty hunter programs where people are going out and registering people to vote. And the comment that you made was that you had identified some serious problems with that, and I just sort of had a passing concern. Well, not curiosity about it. I remember going to dinner one day and getting, you know, asked to sign up three different times and then watching other people getting, and so I wanted to hear if you had some more information about that.
Let me be real clear, Representative Dalto, Mr. Chair. When we say bounty hunter, we mean people who are being paid by the voter registration card or by the signature, rather than being paid hourly, which is what we currently require for initiative petitions. And we had some instances last time with voter registration cards where the collectors were only being paid for cards from one party. And there were some allegations being made that sometimes they would change the party so that they get paid for it. And that's the kind of problem that we really want to try to avoid by eliminating the bounty system from our initiative and petition and voter registration process.
Thank you.
Mr. Secretary, I've got several emails. I won't. I think that when some of the clerks that come up to testify, if I can address those concerns. One very broad question that I wanted to just throw out there to you: military votes, military ballots. It's not if there is a problem, but the concern was if these men and women are voting and let's say they're overseas, the concern was that if they're not counted, what are the reasons why they wouldn't be counted? Is there a leeway for if they're received after the deadline per se? Because of, you know, I know that when I was down in Florida, as an example, I lived in Pensacola, Florida, which is a very military district, and the ballots themselves are entirely different because they don't go through a post office process. You know, they can fly out to a carrier, you know, in the middle of nowhere and pick up ballots that never have a postage stamp, never have a time stamp or a date stamp, excuse me, from the post office that were going to be discounted in light of that. Now, the concerns of the committee, and I won't speak for the committee, I apologize, the concerns that I've had via email and some phone calls are quite frankly, what are the guidelines, and are they different for military ballots, and what efforts go to ensure that those ballots above and beyond are counted? Maybe you could just briefly address that.
The policy in Oregon is very simple, and that is that any ballot no matter what its source, has to be in a county elections official's hands by 8 p.m. on election day. We don't use postmarks. And we work very hard to make sure that ballots are sent out. I think military or overseas ballots go out 45 days before the election. I think that's correct. So that people get them in a timely manner so that they can get them back to us. We also work with the Federal Voting Assistance Project. There are other efforts to make sure that those overseas and those in the military can really make use of the franchise that they have to be citizens.
I appreciate that. I think Representative March had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for coming, and Don. I just wanted to point out that in the primary of 2000, there was a mandatory statewide recount on the treasurer's race.
Oh, right.
I actually went and participated as an observer in Wasco County and was quite impressed by the work of the folks there. But the question was, you mentioned like the lawsuits going on in Washington State. Were there any lawsuits filed about specifically about the election this time in Oregon? I mean, other than the allegations around the cards, you know, and the registrations?
No.
No lawsuits, even though I know there was a lot about observers and watching on both sides.
I have to confess to you that the 2 or 3 weeks prior to the election, this was one of the most, but certainly was the most observed election we've ever had in Oregon. I'm sure most other places too. We were asking for attorney general's opinions probably once every other day on various issues that were being raised about what were, you know, what were the rights, what were the rights to challenge, what were the rights to, you know, do various things in terms of observers and all. And every county went through a remarkable process of, you know, putting clear lines on the floor so that observers knew where they could be and where they couldn't be. And so we set up a system that was fully observed but not interfered with, which I think was really great. But it was a tense time.
But no lawsuits.
But no lawsuits, which is just, I mean, that's really, I got to tell you, that having just been with all, you know, 39 of the secretaries of state are the chief elections officers in their states, and I just have to tell you that we really, this last election, we really stood tall and proud in this state. And no suits, no concerns, no problems with people standing in freezing rain. And it was just really a great confirmation of the way this state has chosen to vote.
Thank you.
Mr. Secretary, one final question, unless the committee has further, and we'll let you go and be respectful of your time. I had a quote in the newspaper, and it was this.
The bear opened his mouth.
That's hang on. We're going to Oregon. I've been waiting to do that, so now is as good a time as any. I had a quote in the newspaper that was as a hypothetical. I swear to you, it was. My mouth got me in trouble. I promise you, it's not the first, nor will it be the last. I said, as an example, you know, I want to make sure that things that go on in Baker County happen in Washington County. And you said that all ballots have to be in by 8 o'clock.
Right.
Now, is the tonight, I'm sweating, but I've got the gavel. At 8 o'clock, is that the deadline? Is that a statewide policy that says that if you're in line, in 2000, you know, again, I was in Florida working the election down there and only heard, you know, you hear about black helicopters, you hear about white helicopters. I don't care what it is. Everybody's got a story to tell, and that's fine. But what's the reality of this 8 o'clock deadline? Can you elaborate?
And there's a couple things. One is we have official drop sites for ballots. Like Multnomah County has a drop site in every public library.
Okay.
So in relation to drop sites or the ballot box at the county, it needs to be in that by 8 o'clock, or you need to be in line to vote at your county elections office. And basically they go out at 8 o'clock and cut the line. I mean, they basically cut the line off. If you're in line at 8 o'clock, you can vote. But if you try to get in line at 8:05, you can't.
And that holds at a drop site as well.
Right.
If there's a drop site, a good example, Marion County here on South Commercial has had elections where they have quite a lengthy line of cars because it's a drive up drop site. And they actually send someone to the back of the line at 8 o'clock. And for those people that are in line, they're allowed to vote at a drop site or at the county elections office.
I'm going to follow up just briefly and then let Representative Greenlee. In theory, then, being very careful, in theory, if I'm in line at 8 o'clock and that line is half a mile long,
right,
I, in theory, could be voting at 9 o'clock.
Yep.
Is that accurate?
That's true.
That is correct.
Gotcha. that was the clarification that I was looking for, and I appreciate that, and I will apologize in advance before I get 34 of you one by one wanting to come up here and beat me up for that comment. It was a hypothetical statement that said, I just want to make sure that blah, blah, blah happens and blah, blah, blah. So it was in no way to impugn the integrity of the people that are working their tails off to ensure integrity. It was a question that was posed as a hypothetical, and I was misquoted. Representative Greenlee.
We'll hold him if you want to.
and if only 34 of you are here, Representative Greenlee and I will make up for the other two.
They're out of line.
I do want to follow up on that, because one of the things that I've heard is a problem is you say in that drop box, that official drop site, it ends at 8. Is there an observer at every single drop site? That there's a box.
The counties have personnel, or they deputize personnel, and you can ask some of the kind of questions about this if you wish, to be at each drop site at that 8 o'clock deadline. And they're also instructed that if there are people in line, to allow people in line to complete the act of voting. And they're all. This has been a standing practice in Oregon for a long time. I am fully confident that all 36 counties are very clear on that, and do their best to try and follow it.
Thank you, sir. Representative Dalton. Final question.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, a great representative from Ontario, Tom Butler. Sometimes you'll see that he's wearing two watches. You know, and I'm like, Tom, what are you wearing two watches for? One on each wrist. And he says, oh, so I know what time it is at home. This is Salem time, this is home time.
Right.
And I'm like, well, just subtract 1 hour or whatever. You know, I don't even watch. But anyway, so my question is, out of curiosity.
Add 1 hour.
Well, whatever.
Now you understand the problem.
I think this committee is getting too informal. But anyway, so you're adding an hour. So is it 8 o'clock for, is it 8 o'clock Valley time for the folks out in Eastern Oregon?
They go by their own time zone. Representative Dalton, it will be 8 o'clock their local time.
Okay, can I ask a second question?
Only if it's a formal question.
Thank you. It is a formal question. And, you know, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I wanted to, I guess I can't resist bringing it up. Is there a procedure with your office, the elections division, that stipulates what it means to be at the back of the line to cut somebody off at an appointed time? And a procedure that you share with the counties?
Good question.
Well, it seems to me that we've had some conversations about this with clerks, about if there is a line and it's a really long line, it would be best to send somebody to the back of that line, or for your person that's at the drop site or at the county, if they have to observe it at 8 o'clock where the back of the line is, so that they know. Let me give you an example of that. I was very impressed. I was in Multnomah County on election night at 8 o'clock. They had a very long line at 8 o'clock. I thought they wouldn't be done till midnight when I looked at it. They had really impressive line management. They had some people join the line after 8 o'clock. They knew exactly who they were. They had enough people out there to spot it. They knew where the end of the line was. They knew which people in line would therefore vote provisional ballots rather than regular ballots because they had joined the line late. And they were done by 9:30. And they just did a magnificent job on election night in Multnomah County. And I wish I could have been at all the counties because I think that was probably repeated several places. It's not the easiest job in the world, but they were all, believe me, very aware of this issue because they had observers from both the Republican and Democratic camps hounding us about that issue for weeks prior to the election. And so they were all very aware of it, conscious of it.
Great.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Thank you. I'm glad you brought up, John, the issue of line management, because I want to know how it works in the Secretary of State's office. And the reason why I want to know is because I was denied once an opportunity to submit my voter's pamphlet statement, even though I was at one office at 5 o'clock but didn't quite make it downstairs, to the room where they were accepting voter pamphlet statements, and I was consequently denied my voter's pamphlet entry into the primary in the 2002 election cycle. The reason why I bring that up is because in the 2004 general election, I was observing the line management at the Elections Division, the Secretary of State's office, and just before 5 o'clock, Elections Division staff came out where people were submitting the ballots, the statements, measure statements. It was a long line. There were really contentious ballot measures this go-around, and so there was a long line, and a state trooper was brought in to manage the end of the line, and so I'm standing there, and I'm watching, cognizant of what happened to me 2 years ago, and one of my colleagues from this body comes in 20 minutes after the 5 o'clock deadline and is allowed to get into the line and is allowed to submit that person's voter's pamphlet statement. And so as we're talking about line management and you explain a perfect case of how well it works in Multnomah County, this is just a comment, not a question. I would say that it was very disconcerting for me. I mean, there was a lawsuit with just Judge Schumann about this very issue, about when a voter's pamphlet statement could be accepted, when it couldn't. And there, I will tell you, there are inconsistencies in the Secretary of State's office about how this is applied. And I'm not going to make a federal case out of it, but I wanted to bring that to your attention because I know that I was denied, somebody else was allowed, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. And we can put all the pieces together if we want to research this issue, and we'll get the trooper down, and you know, we'll get to the bottom of this if you want to, and I don't want to because I don't want to make a big deal about it. But it just seems to me that there was a consistency issue there that I want to point out to you, and I apologize that I'm doing that for the first time here in this forum, but came to my mind. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And
thank you.
The committee appreciates it. At this time, I think the committee is going to stand at ease for about 3 or 4 minutes, give you guys a chance to take a break, give the secretary a chance to get out, and stretch your legs, get a cup of coffee, and then we'll come back and hear your testimony. Thank you. We'll stand at ease. Come back in.
That's right.
Do we have enough chairs? Thank you once again for your guys' patience and hearing the Secretary of State. He always has great words of wisdom, speaking from years and years of institutional knowledge. We may not always agree politically, but I can tell you that I always respect him. So thank you guys for being here. Looking forward to your testimony. Looking forward to answering some questions and some concerns. The idea behind this committee and the direction this committee is looking to go is not to be, and I just want to, for the record, say, not to be in an adversarial role with the county clerks. It's to work with you and hear your concerns and say, what can we do to make sure that we help you and enable you to do your job to the best of your ability, and alleviate any concerns with the Oregon public and anybody else. And I think we share those same goals. And as we travel around the state and hear concerns from the voters of this state, as I've got pages and pages of emails and questions and concerns, that we're able to address those concerns. And if there are concerns that come up, I hope that we have the relationship that anybody in the committee is able to call upon you and say, I had a question. Is this true? And you say no or yes. And if the answer is yes and it's something in the negative, how can we work together to address the concern and make sure that we're all firing, I would say on 8 cylinders, but in this case 36 cylinders, to make this great state run the best that we all want it to run. So with that, this is not a witch hunt. This is not me against you or the committee against you. We think you're all doing a great job. We're from the government, and we're here to help. So, with that, I will do my best to keep my mouth shut and allow you to speak to the committee. Thank you again for being here.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dee Berman. I'm the Crook County Clerk, and I'm also the president of the association. And we want to tell you how we truly appreciate this incredible offer that you've given us to be here. We are just absolutely stunned that you did it, and we are very thrilled to be here. There are 34 of us here. Polk County and Lake County are the two counties that were not able to be here today, but the rest of us are here. We're more than happy to answer any of your questions. Many of us are very shy, don't want to get up here, and didn't volunteer to come up. We have a few that are more outgoing that are willing to come up and speak first, and then if you have questions, any of us would love to answer. So I'm going to turn it over to the less shy ones.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to ask each of them to stand up and identify who they are and where they come from? It would be enlightening for me.
Well, what am I going to say, no now?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I should have asked that.
Slide me a note next time.
Excuse me, sir.
Well, I think that'd be a great idea, Representative. If y'all are comfortable with that, I'd love to actually, hear where you're from and put a name and a face and so on and so forth, because I think it's a testament to you guys, what you do, that everybody's been willing to come from Baker County to Washington County. So if we could, why don't we, if possible, let's just start in the front row and just go back, and then over here, if that works.
I'm Charlotte McIver. I'm a Wallowa County clerk.
Great.
Bill Burgess from Marion County, the Eden at the end of the Oregon Trail, newly elected county clerk.
Annette Newingham, and I'm the appointed Lake County elections official.
Great.
Kathy O'Neill, Sonoma County elected official. Nikki Kovai, Washington County manager. Bobby Chilbers, New York County clerk.
Welcome. Start in the front over here then. Or no, I'm sorry, go back.
Renee Coleman, Curry County Clerk.
John Kaufman, Multnomah County Elections Director.
Sandy Berry for the County Clerk.
Connor, Jackson County Elections Deputy.
Kathy Beckett, Jackson County Clerk.
Art Harvey, Justin County Chief Deputy.
James Morales, Benton County, Represent Elections Manager.
Jill Van Buren, Benton County Elections Supervisor.
Sherry Hall, Clackamas County Clerk.
All right, did we get everybody? And these people will address yourself, sure. If you want to blame anybody for me, blame Mickey. She certified my election, so. All right. Please continue.
Okay. I'm Nellie Bogue-Hibbert, Union County Clerk, which county seat is in La Grande, and that's on the far eastern side. So I represent one of the rural counties. And today I'm here to give you a little bit of a background on the evolution of vote by mail in the state of Oregon, simply because it started back in 1981, and I don't know how many of you have that background, and if you already have it, I apologize for being redundant. However, we're going to do a quick review of how we got from where we started to where we are today. And I would just like to say, first of all, to Chair Kitts and to the committee members, how appreciative I am for the opportunity of being here today and representing my county as well as the Oregon Association of County Clerks. We come as a united body, and so one of my responsibilities today is to give you a little bit of that history. In 1981, the legislature did pass a bill that allowed the counties to have special district measures on the ballot and do that in a manner of vote by mail. Then in 1983, the legislature ruled that special district candidates could then be elected vote by mail. And then later in 1987, there was a bill enacted by the legislature that would allow all elections, with the exception of the primary and general, to be conducted in a vote by mail manner. Then something happened that was probably the most influential thing that happened with our vote-by-mail procedures and also a directive for where we are today. And that was in 1995, former Secretary of State Phil Kiesling commissioned a 12-board nonpartisan member to investigate or do a research on the method of voting, the direction it should take. And as a result of that, they all recommended that all elections be held as vote by mail. It's interesting to me that in that finding that this 12-board member came forth with, we have implemented or are in the process of implementing their recommendations. And one of the things that they did recommend, even then, 10 years ago, they recommended that we have a centralized voter registration system. And we are presently involved in that, as you well know. Then in December 1995, we had a special primary election in which it was to nominate a U.S. senator. Following that, in January 1996, and that was done vote by mail. That was the first vote by mail election that we had to nominate a federal candidate. Then in 1996, we had a special general election in which the candidate was elected, and that was statewide as well. In that election, there was a 66% turnout. And that was not to mention that the amount of money that was saved as a result of having gone vote by mail. We all know how precious our local budgets are. We watch that very carefully. This was a real testimony to us that there was a great way of doing an election without breaking the budget. Then in 1997, we failed to get a bill for vote by mail. And as a result of that, in 1998, the League of Women Voters began an initiative that we have vote by mail placed on the ballot. That passed overwhelmingly with a 67% margin. And as a result of that, we now have vote by mail for all elections in Oregon. Now here we are, post-2004, elections. And as Secretary Bradbury mentioned, we ended up with an 86.5% turnout, a record turnout for the state of Oregon. That is a testament in itself for the method of vote by mail. Not only did we conduct that in a manner that was one of high integrity, but we also did it in a manner in which, again, we tried to watch the budget as well as provide the election process to the public. The one thing I would like to mention, and we're going to get into this further, is that Oregon has a very well-defined manner of doing elections, and it becomes a win-win for all of us. I go no place in an election meeting without my vote-by-mail manual. I carry it always because that is the definitive thing that helps us with our elections, and you're going to be hearing more about that. Again, I would like to just express my appreciation to Chair Kitts and to the board members for allowing us to make this presentation today. And again, thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anybody else speaking?
Both. Chair Kitts and members of the committee, my name is Jan Coleman. I am the Yamhill County Clerk, and I represent the Valley counties from North Multnomah clear down south to Lane County. I'd like to tell you an experience.
Okay.
I'd like to tell you an experience I had. I joined Election Community in 1983. One of the first elections we had when I joined the office was my first vote by mail. So I came into that early. But those were very regulated elections, and we could only have them at certain times, as Nellie just told you. About the next year, they gave me my own election to do. It was a small city, about 900 registered voters, and it was my turn to try to see if I could get everything in place. So we had punch card ballots. I punched the masks. I packed the machines. I assembled the machines. I packed the machines and got everything ready for the polling place. And we had about six poll workers to go out there. They stayed all day, 12 hours in those days, 8 to 8. We had an 8% turnout. An 8% turnout of 900 voters, you figured that out, how many people came in that 12-hour period. Needless to say, as a new person working that, I was really disappointed. Today, we're really pleased to say that even in a poor election with vote by mail, we get pretty much always a 25 to 30% turnout. What a difference. You know, as an election official, that makes me feel good. We've already told you that we had an 86.5% participation voter registration turnout in the general election. We also had 70% of those who really could vote, vote. And that is much higher than we have had in past years. We as election officials, particularly in the Valley, we were inundated with registrations. It was amazing. But we all came out of it, and we were delighted to have that many people really want to vote. The thing we really were pleased to, though, we gave you timely results. We had no long lines of people waiting to vote. Without a polling place, it's just really different. And the people have so much more time. I can't tell you how many people have told me. It is such a pleasure to be able to sit down at my table, take the voter pamphlet and other materials, and mark my ballot. I don't have to do it all at one time. I can do it over several days. Sometimes the kids come and we talk about these different things. It's a family affair. Some of these are very unsolicited things. They, you know, actually find out that I'm election official and it just kind of effervesces. Those are other things that are, they're really pleasing. You know, you feel like, oh, this job is really worthwhile. There are several things I'd like to tell you that you know, as an election official and working vote by mail, we don't have to deal with polling places, which had become so much of a problem for us to maintain. And other states are experiencing this very same thing. Very difficult to get all the election workers you need. And election morning, somebody bails out on you, and it's really, really difficult. The other thing in place is we don't have to go try to spend our money and others' money doing ADA upgrades to all these polling places, because that's a very important thing that has to be done. And, you know, if it's not our money, it's theirs. Another thing is with the Help America Vote Act, for each polling place, we need to have some kind of device for the disabled to vote, whether it's what they call a DRE, a touchscreen voting device, or another device that is for the disabled voters. For instance, in Washington County, in the last polling place election, they had about 325 polling places. From 6,000 to 11,000, a machine, 325 polling places. Vote by mail is saving us money. So those are all things to consider, you know, all things to be proud of in Oregon's system.
Chairman Kitz, members of the committee, I'm Jim Barrow. I'm the ex officio county clerk for Umatilla County. Our county seat, of course, is Pendleton, Oregon, and I have the pleasure of supporting the elections process for our roughly 70,000 citizens and 33,000 elected voters, Representative Jensen, Representative Smith, and, of course, Senator Nelson. It's a pleasure for me to be here also. I fear you're hearing from the good and now the bad. I'll leave the ugly to the next round. I actually have my Baker County also, Mr. Chair. It's in Burns. I am the renegade of my colleagues. I'm not an elector of the state of Oregon. As a appointed elections official and county clerk in Umatilla County, as you know, I'm sure we're a home rule county, I don't have to stand for election and therefore can afford to make such outrageous statements as I just burdened you with. But I live in Walla Walla, Washington. I've lived in Walla Walla since 1993. I am a 41-year registered voter who has voted by mail in every single election in my life since I was 21 years old. I'm a military brat, and I was a career serviceman. I never lived in where I could go to a polling place in my life, and it was not until I moved to Washington State 11 years ago that I had the opportunity to actually go to a polling place. It was a hideous experience. It rained, and there were long lines, and I promptly discovered I could vote permanent absentee in the state of Washington, something that is so closely parallel to vote by mail that in my mind there's little distinction. I promptly registered to vote by mail and have continued doing that for the next 10 years. I know our county auditor in Walla Walla County. I know our Secretary of State, Mr. Sam Reed, and I know the pain that my neighbors went through in that election that we've just survived in Washington, and that Oregon, I think, quite justly is able to pat itself on the back for. The last time I voted in a precinct, there were 8 election workers, and that day 17 people cast ballots in that precinct. The most recent time that precinct existed, there were 4 voters and 6 election workers. As a result, in the 2004 presidential election, the county auditor abolished all precincts and had unified voting at the county fairgrounds for the handful, the few hundred, that chose to go and vote that way. Our neighbors to the north, I think, see Washington, what Oregon has, and what we have matured and honed over the last several years, as described by Nellie in her opening statement to this committee. It is a system that is working. It is a system that is being looked at increasingly as a model of efficiency, a model of saving money when money is difficult to come by, a model that serves the voters. A model that is as error-free and as fraud-free as human being instruments can be. And again, as someone who served in the military for 28 years and who voted absentee, I have to tell you, that system serves. It serves not only Oregonians, it serves an increasing number of people throughout the country, and it's the wave of the future. I sincerely hope the enhancements to vote by mail, and OCVR being one of them, and the funding for it, will receive this committee's favorable attention. And I, too, thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon.
Pleasure.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, thank you very much. I have three more clerks that would like to visit with you, and I guarantee they're not ugly. I also have a gavel, and I'm going to use it on Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. If you could just please state your name for the record before you testify, that'd be great.
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, I was going to state that I guess I'm the ugly.
No.
But, you know, Jim was at a meeting earlier today, and he had...
Is that your name?
My real name, besides ugly, is a.k.a. Tassie O'Neill, Tillamook County Clerk.
Right.
Today in a meeting, Jim had a banana, and I think that maybe he brought that with him to slip on as he was here calling us three ladies ugly. So,
or choke on.
He may have just became the person that I pick on at the meetings now, because there was someone else that I picked on. I'm here today to talk to you about a manual that has been called a dynamic document before. It's called the Vote by Mail Manual. It's a compilation of information from county clerks and the Secretary of State's office. It's a tool that provides uniformity on election processes and procedures. We recognize the necessity to conduct elections consistently. We have a committee appointed to make the changes in the manual and making it a work in progress. This includes input from all counties, the Secretary of State, and others, which could include you. If you have comments, if you'd like to look at the manual, it is on the Secretary of State's office webpage. Any newest versions are available on there at any time. We go through these at a training session for those changes provided to the clarity to each county along with the Secretary of State's office. One of the things that was mentioned in the meeting earlier was voter intent, and there are many examples in this vote by mail that helps us figure out voter intent, so that might help you clarify how we come up with what the voter intent is, where we've spent numerous hours going over how to figure out what the voter intent of a voter is. So Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I thank you for having me here today.
Thank you for being here.
Chair Kitts, and board members, I'm sorry. Is that correct? Committee members, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes, you can see I'm first time doing this.
I've been called a lot worse, I promise you that.
My name is Charlotte McIver. I'm the Wallowa County Clerk. The county seat is Enterprise, Oregon. My purpose here today is to ask the members of this committee to make sure that whatever you do to enhance our election process, that you don't make it harder on the voters to do their voting. One thing that the rural counties, which I am one of, will be concerned about is that the mailing window for our ballots. Presently, we have a maximum 18-day window, which was reduced from 20 days. Rural counties would be greatly affected if this timeline would be reduced further. In Wallowa County, the mail takes 2 days to be delivered, mainly because it goes to Pendleton and then comes back to our county. And so if it goes from Enterprise, it goes to the Pendleton Post Office, we sort it, comes back to our county. So that's a two-day down and back. We also have a community of Minnehaha, which only gets their mail 3 times a week. Harney County, for an example, has a community which takes 4 days for them to get the mail from the Burns Post Office. Vice versa, if they send a mail back to Burns, it takes 4 days to get there. I am sure that there are many other counties in the state that have rural communities that are affected by that timeline, and we are hoping that this timeline will not be shortened further, which would make it hard for our voters to get their ballots back to us in a timely manner. I thank you again, and we appreciate your time and your consideration. Thank you.
You bet.
Chair Kitts and members of the committee, my name is Annette Newingham, Lane County election official, and I am the legislative chair of the Oregon Association of County Clerks, so I hope to see you more than once through this process. What I am here today to kind of go over is a little bit of some of the legislative issues that we have talked about as an association and what you hopefully will be have an opportunity to talk about. We have several bills that the secretary has introduced in some of that language, and several of those bills we actually have some interest in that, and on those bills I will, as the hearings are scheduled, we will be attending to give you information on that. There also may be some minor amendments that are dealing with some kind of housekeeping things that have come up since that point in time. Most of the things that are in those bills that we have interest in are really just the day-to-day processes we do that as vote by mail has evolved, we find that some things become dated and not really pertinent to the way we do business today. And we would like to be sure that we're adhering to the state law as well as the vote by mail manual. Additionally, we have been working with Senator Nelson dealing with the precinct committee people language, and I believe that language has been shared with you, Chair Kitts, and members of the committee, hopefully. But if not, we hope that the bill will come out soon. It's not out yet, to my knowledge. I have been checking up to through yesterday. It hadn't been. On that precinct committee people, one of the background on that I would like to say is that the purpose of that is to try to find a win-win situation, and we've been working with both the Democrat and the Republican parties to make sure that whatever this language is, whether it needs to be amended or whatever, is that it meets the needs of the parties, but somehow could maybe reduce the amount of work that is involved at the money that's involved in this. We estimated over $180,000 that has been spent, and we haven't finalized some of the counties. They haven't turned that in. I'm still compiling some of the data from the other counties, and I'll have a final information that I will plan to share to legislators so that they'll have an idea of what the purpose of that is. And I do look forward to working with you to that discussion. Another example is the soil and water, and that is a similar issue. In Lane County, for instance, I had a soil and water position that was no candidate filed, and we had 13,000 write-ins for that one position. Took us all week to process that. It was over $11,000 that we spent just for that portion. And at the time that the winner, the person with the top vote getter, I should say, ended up being a candidate on one of the other positions, it ended up being vacant in the first place. So we went through this exercise. What we find is that on no candidate filed positions, whether it's precinct committee people or it is on this situation, you really end up with a lot of people, right? They like to write their neighbor in, their aunt, their uncle. It's not necessarily a serious process. And we do want it to be helpful and meaningful, and there's maybe some other ways we'd like to explore to try to accomplish what people need. and that is certainly to fill positions with viable candidates. And that's what we would want in the first place, is to put names on the ballot and not to do something else. As far as the other, we don't have any other legislation that we're really working on in particular right now. We would have concerns dealing with, like, there is a bill out that has been introduced that changes the primary election to September. 2 years ago, we had a similar bill that we testified on, and we would certainly have concerns about that. I know it was brought up earlier about military ballots and the time length for people to get their vote to the ballot to them and for them to vote in return. When you bring down to September, you overlay a lot of dates and you condense things down, and there's a lot of danger to that. And we had data from 2 years ago that I'd be glad to also reintroduce and to share with committee members, so that they would have an idea as to why that's a true conflict and not just that we just don't like it, because there's really some basis for that. You might also want to know that Washington State had many problems as a result of this last recount, and some of those problems were the result of the primary election being so close, because they have a September and then turning around and having their general election. Nellie Bo Hibbert from Union County and I actually attended a meeting in Olympia, Washington, with the auditors in Washington, because they were asking us questions about vote by mail. And one of the comments they made was this conflict that they had with the September primary, and we're going to introduce legislation to bring it earlier in the year. So it's just something that I would like to make you aware of. Last, because I know you're probably tired of hearing from all of us, possibly, the main thing is that we would like to be resources for you. It is very important for us that you know that you can call us at any point. If you don't, you think something is not correct, or you're getting a constituent call and you think there's a problem with the election process, please do call us up. We really want to be helpful resources through the legislative process and just elections in general. And we are also very interested in what your concerns are. And if you have concerns, please do let us know, so that we can help provide what clarity we can from the elections perspective.
And I know that that's vice versa in the case of Tamara, that you guys will have no problem in calling me. If y'all have any questions, and I appreciate that as well. I've got a couple questions. My colleagues, I'm sure, have questions as well. I would also submit to my colleagues, I'm not going to allow the committee to run till midnight. That's not the way I run my committee. It's a 4-6 committee. That's the way it runs. So we will keep in respect with your time as well. And obviously, if the committee has further questions beyond that time frame, emails are very accessible, as are questions, and hopefully that the questions can be addressed at that time. That being said, I'm the chairman. I will ask my questions first. I just wanted to touch on a couple different things. There's been an idea floating out there that would have candidates from dog catcher, soil and water, as the example that you said. I don't mean to trivialize soil and water. To governor, filed their reports on this web-based system that we referred to earlier. It would effectively relieve the county clerk's offices from having to audit and take care of the senior reports and stuff of all those, and kind of transition it to the state on this centralized web-based system. Any feedback on that, or is it too premature to discuss?
Mr. Chair and the members of the committee, really, as far as that filing system, it really has a greater impact for the state. Their contributions and expenditure filings are humongous compared to what the counties pertain to. I don't really think it would impact us directly. Without knowing a little bit more, it doesn't seem to be. And maybe, no, I don't think so.
Follow up? Okay. Couple random questions that I received via email that I would just like to address, that I can get back with the people that sent them. Number one, and I'm just reading this from the question, why is proof of ID only considered a requirement for federal elections, and doesn't Article 2, Section 5 imply of the Oregon Constitution that this is essential for state and local elections also. So if you can just answer that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the HAVA bill, this federal election legislation, really was gone over with a lot of different people. There was attorneys that reviewed it and set out, there was many meetings with the Secretary of State's office. I know the Attorney General's office reviewed it and interpreted what we needed to do. They also met with other states to get the correct interpretation of what we were supposed to do as far as ID is required. And it was never interpreted that we would need to have it for the state. Now, we request ID for all voters that we receive their registration cards by mail. We really don't differentiate or treat them differently in Oregon. We actually treat them the same. We would follow through with that ID after we receive a card and it's by mail. We request it if it's not received at that point in time. I would like to reassure you, though, that the very fact that we're going to an Oregon voter registration system, centralized voter registration system, that is going to really eliminate eventually the need for that ID, because they will be providing the driver's license, and they will be, and if not, they'll be the last four digits of the Social Security. And when we enter that into the system, and I'm one of the test pilots, in fact, I'm going March 7th is my cutover of Lane County, and we are already testing the prototype. And when I put in my name, because of course everybody puts their own name in first, I am instantly connected to the Department of Motor Vehicles with my driver's license. So it really works, and I feel that that's going to really address the issues of the HAVA bill, which will give the assurity for state and for federal elections.
Great. I'm going to ask one more question, just because it's related to my infamous quote. with regard to the 8 o'clock deadline, would, you know, and this was one of the parameters that we were trying to get at as far as, you know, a uniform system statewide. What would happen if, let's say, instead of sending the elections person from the county out to the end of the line as a placeholder, that you send two out, one as a placeholder and one to collect every ballot from that placeholder to the door to take in to the elections to lock the door? Is something like that? I'm sure I'm not Albert Einstein and have come up with the most ingenious idea here tonight, but it's concerns like that, I think, that people have is, you know, like you're saying, where does the placeholder stand? Are there people coming in after that? And I mean, you're never going to be perfect. I understand that. I think you're very close. But
Chair Kitts and members, I would have to say for my own county and maybe for other counties, the only thing I would see as an issue with that is staff members. And I'm sure that we would all be more than willing to do what we could to have that happen. And it's a very good idea, I believe.
Okay. I'm going to not hog every bit of the questions. I think Representative Farr had a question. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Kitts. And for the record, I might also point out that Representative Farr is the only member of this committee that has not asked a single question, much less multiple questions.
Is that good or bad?
That's up to you to decide. Annette, and by the way, Annette is from Lane County, and so this question is specifically for her. We had a rather contentious mayor's race in Eugene, and there was a lot of momentum behind a write-in candidate.
Mm-hmm.
The candidate that was asked to be the write-in chose not to move his name forward. I know that many people were not satisfied with only one candidate on the ballot, so they still wrote his name in. I've received several emails from constituents that have asked me if those write-in ballots were counted.
Yes. Representative Farr and Chair Kitts and members of the committee. I can explain that. Yes, we do tally write-ins. We are optical scan now, and when a voter marks the write-in block instead of voting for the individual on the ballot, the system automatically tallies it as a write-in. So what it does is it gives us a total tabulation for how many write-ins is for that position. Based on state law, first thing I would do is, and did do, is take a look at the total votes for write-ins and then who the vote getter was, and if as long as those write-ins are less than what the top vote getter gets, I do not have to hand tally. I could do it if it, we are not obligated to do so. And we certainly would rather not do it, because in the past years when I first started, you did have to do it even though they didn't have any amount of votes that could even win the election. It was just like, how many did I get? A lot of people ask that question. Had it been equal to or greater than the person who was the top vote getter, we would be obligated to do a tally of each individual name.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Please.
What cost is associated with that? For example, in this case, there were a number of ballots that were kicked out, and they had to be hand-counted.
No, they don't have to be. My equipment, my ballot counter, actually tabulates the write-ins without having to do any further work, as long as I don't have to hand tally it, because it's equal to or greater than.
I see. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm going to ask you a question since there are no others at this time. What is the process currently? Someone, I'm going to walk you through a scenario. Someone sends in their ballot, it's there. They fill everything out correctly. They don't sign it. And let's say it's, we talked about the window. My understanding from what I've read or via email, I just want to clarify for myself, is that if it's early enough in the process that certain county clerks will call that person and verify, hey, this is Jane Smith, got a ballot here, doesn't have a signature, did you send it in? It's twofold. Is that consistent throughout the process, or is there a cutoff? And is the ballot opened before the phone call is made?
Chair Pitts, members of the committee, ballots, it will differentiate, and I'll explain to you why. First of all, we would never open up a ballot if we don't have a signature. It's not considered valid, so any ballot that is questionable, whether we reject it because of a signature issue or otherwise, we would never open up the ballot because it's not countable in the first place for whatever reason.
Okay.
We would, when we receive ballots, as soon as we get ballots in the mail and we get ballots from our drop sites, we go and look through whether there's a signature on it. And sometimes that might be missed during that process, but during the signature viewing process, it's pretty obvious. The whole idea is we want to act on it quickly, and we want to get those ballots back to the voters so that they can vote on it. I'll speak for Lane County. We do mail back all the ballots that don't have it. We have a letter, we highlight it, and we tell them that you need to sign it and what the requirements are. Because early on in that process, they are given a lot of time to be able to respond to that. But we are not obligated to mail replacements or other ballots past the fifth day before the election. And there gets to be a point where if you mailed it back, they might not get it in time. So we would make an attempt to call them by phone to let them know that they didn't sign it and they can come in. And many people do, and they're really quite grateful. If we can't get hold of them, we would maybe send it to them still, because they might still get it and be able to act on that.
Yeah.
So we have a saying in Lane County, and I would imagine my fellow clerks have the same saying. We do heroics to get people to be able to vote. It's extremely important to us that we take down the barriers and we provide options to people within the law, of course, to be able to cast their ballot, because it's important to us.
Now, if I can just follow up with that, of course I can. That being said, is that an example of something that county by county has discretion on for implementation? I mean, you do one thing, and is that Baker County over there doing another thing? Baker County is branded in this committee now. Is that an example of discretion amongst the county clerks in when to call back, what to mail back, what the cutoff for a mail back ballot is or a phone call. Is that an example of discretion?
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, the vote by mail manual actually outlines our requirement to notify the voter on a return ballot. So there is a minimum requirement that we all have to adhere to equally. The only difference might be is that the differences in size, you can see we are all quite different.
Sure.
And there is a certain degree of differences that you will see because of our size difference. And there might be some that will always try to make a phone call attempt. But Multnomah County, which has maybe, I don't know, I'm at 212,000 registered voters, they're twice as large. Right. Their volume might be such that just mailing it back directly is the most manageable way to get it to the voter in time. So the differences are not, we all adhere to a certain guideline, and that you can count on consistency.
So just to clarify, there is a minimum requirement as outlined by the vote by mail manual. Above and beyond that is the discretion, individual counties have.
Well, to some degree, we certainly talk about it as a group, and maybe you might want to let Charlotte might have a good example of that.
Chair Kipps and the committee members, I'm sorry, being a very small county, mm-hmm. knowing most of our people in the county, we go through the process immediately of calling the voter, and if we can't get a hold of the voter, we will get a hold of their wife that works down the street or their daughter that is wherever.
Ellie tells Susie to get down here.
That's right, exactly. We do, but we have a time limit. If we have to go through the second day of not being able to contact them, we shoot them out a notification. But we still continue to try to call them.
And I'm going to elaborate on that one step further. A ballot that hasn't been signed versus a signature that you would deem doesn't quite match. Are they treated the same by the county elections, or is...
Well, the process for each one individually is treated the same.
Okay.
But the two processes are not treated the same, because a signature that doesn't match, we're not going to mail it back to the voter. Or, we're not going to necessarily... We might call them. That might be the same. But the difference is that they also have 10 days to respond to the issue if it's a signature that doesn't match. Whereas if they haven't signed the ballot... doesn't meet it by the 8 p.m. election day, they can't sign it after 8 p.m. election day. It wouldn't, because it didn't meet minimums at the 8 p.m. time.
Let me follow up on that.
I'm sorry, it's probably a little more detailing.
No, and these are the kinds of questions that are the purpose of what this committee is trying mm-hmm. to address, and I don't want to call them irregularities or inconsistencies. I just want to find out the parameters of what exactly it is that we're dealing. My concern, let me just give you an example. If I mail in my ballot and the signature doesn't match, okay, and let's say being 31 and a little scatterbrained, I drop it off the last second. So I get it in there at 7:59, legal, done. My signature doesn't match, according to you. What happens to that ballot, number one? I'm probably not contacted because you don't have time. I understand time constraints. But number two, does it show up as me simply not voting? Does it show up as me attempting to have voted? You see that question? Is that clear?
Yes. Chair Kitts, members of the committee. There's different questions that you've asked, and I'll try to do it that doesn't confuse you. But there's a lot of parts to that. And first of all, the systems. All of our voter registration systems are not identical. So the manner in which we noted in the record might be a little bit different to some extent. But we do keep track of all of us would keep track of it. The time that the ballot comes in, we are required to check signatures. that's the first thing we do after we show that the ballots come back. We give activity to the voter saying the ballots come back, because we do need to do that, because if another ballot would come back for that same voter for some oddball reason, let's say they ask for a replacement and they're trying to test the system and they voted twice, we need to know that the first one comes back so that we know that there's a second ballot. So all of us have to manage it in some way to know when there's multiple ballots and to prevent multiple ballots from being counted. And we do. Then second of all is that we check the signature. The signature doesn't match. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to say the signature, you know, we put it, we hold it aside. We never open the ballot.
Okay.
And we would send a notification to the voter, and we tell them that we were unable to count their ballot because of a signature discrepancy, and that they have 10 days after the election to resolve the issue. And the reason they do, now certainly if it was signed by somebody totally different than the person that it was sent to, we would never be able to count the ballot. But we don't know always all those circumstances. Sometimes people's signatures can change. We have people that they didn't notify us beforehand. They broke their arm. Now they're writing with their signature with their left hand. Well, it doesn't match, and we need to determine that. Well, they could come in, explain to us the circumstances, give us a new registration card, let's say, for that election that we could match, and we get that validation process going. So those 10 days are to determine whether this is really the voter or not, and they have an opportunity to respond to those inquiries. And then we would count the ballot if we resolve those issues by the 10th day.
Even with the scenario that I just laid out at 7:59 on election day, I would then be given the opportunity to...
Absolutely.
With no signature?
No,
not the no signature. The signature doesn't match. If we determine that it is the voter, we would be able to process and count the ballot.
Okay. Those are just some of the, you know, some of the scenarios that I've had presented to me that I just simply wanted to give you a chance to respond to. And I think that, you know, we're able to see that there are, you know, some parameters that we're all dealing with. The last thing that I want to do is, as a state, is preempt you guys from any kind of discretion. So I do want to make sure that the last thing that I want dealing with unsigned ballots or maybe signatures that don't match is a recount to happen, and all of a sudden we're going to Multnomah County, Lane County, Washington County, and we got a pile of ballots, you know, that weren't counted, but now we're going to count them. And I want to make sure that when it goes through the process that it's vetted the first time through and that there are no ballots laying there that could potentially be recounted. I want those to be discarded ballots that say those are no longer, those are done. They can never be looked at. We've determined that they're fraudulent. We've determined that they're you know, inactive ballots, whatever you want to call it. So those are some of the things that I'm trying to get at in my roundabout way to prevent certain things from happening. Is there any other questions for the panelists from the committee? I feel like I've a lot out of my system. So, and I know that there'll be a lot.
Good.
Representative Holvey.
I was just wondering if any of you have any comments about the voter registration cards and where we're going with that, making sure folks are going to be registering and only once and verifying that they're actually eligible to vote.
Chair Kitts and committee members, one of the things that we've done is we're implementing the Oregon Centralized Voter Registration System. And so in that, with the ID number from the driver's license or the last four digits of your Social Security card, those are some of the things that will help with that. Each county will be able to access that system. And so if someone moves from one county to another, we will be able to pick that up and update them to the new county. Therefore, making duplicate registrations pretty hard to do. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I was just
follow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted some feedback that you think that this system is really going to, you know, solve the problem that we perceive with multiple registrations.
Okay. It's going to help.
Thank you.
Committee, seeing no. Yep. Representative Mark?
I just wanted to make a comment, Mr. Chair, and to the clerks and other members of the public out there that in these informational hearings, many of us deal with them as a little more informally than when we are dealing with an actual bill or piece of legislation, and sometimes our humor is a little irreverent. Sometimes it's, it may appear as though we're attacking another member or the chair or even sometimes members of the audience who may be from Washington State. But we in no way mean disrespect in that, and we hope that the informality of this actually elicits a little more comfort in you. But again, we don't intend to mean disrespect to anyone. So thank you.
None taken.
I hope not. Thank you so much for those comments.
Thank you very much.
That is reflective of the committee. Thank you so much for being here. At this time, I'm going to close the informational hearing on everything that we've talked about. I think we hit a myriad of different issues. So thank you so much for being here. I'm positive there's 14 million other things that you would have rather done than spend these 2 hours here, but it's greatly appreciated by this committee. So thank you. Committee, we have two more orders of business. At this time, I'm going to move to the introduction, move back to introduction of committee measures. And this time, I'll open up a work session on committee measures. Staff, do you want to explain what it is exactly that we're asking of the committee?
At this time, Mr. Chair, we're asking the committee to introduce five bills. At this time, we're not able to discuss them until once they've been introduced and we get them back if they get assigned to our committee. And so I just need a motion from the committee to introduce these bills.
Representative Thatcher.
I move that LC Draft 1746, 1750, 1751, 1752, and 1755 be drafted as committee bills.
Representative Thatcher moves that the aforementioned LCs be referred to LC to be drafted as committee bill. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will please call the roll.
Representative
Galco. Aye.
Representative
Barb.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Colby. Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. They will be introduced as committee bills. Close that work session. Thank you, committee, for your indulgence. We'll now open a public hearing for the brief time that we have, and I apologize for the brief time that we have. At this time, I will call forward Ruth Bendel at this time. Ruth, do you and Cappy want to go at the same time?
My name is Ruth Bendel, and I did email testimony to you, so I'm just going to cover very briefly some of my responses. I really have a difficulty with the fact that proof of ID is required according to HAVA. And according to Appendix 10, the letter that is sent to people who've not sent in proof of ID, so that I have a real problem with the fact that then the vote by mail rules provide for removal of any trace of the fact that that person has not complied with a requirement, has been sent a ballot, and then is sent a voter ID card. I have referenced in some questions that I submitted to you the vote by mail manual page and number of the page where this is supplied, page 31 in particular. And I don't understand, if identification is not necessary, why the taxpayers paying the money for an additional letters to be sent out to that person? And then why is it that the spokesperson from the Secretary of State's office, Ms. Martin, says, if you're dead or a dog, we're trying to prevent you from voting? Where's the prevention? As long as we do not know based on the voter registration card, whether you're a dog or a resident from a cemetery, whether somebody is exploiting the open-ended nature of this system, why do we know that the system is free of fraud? And I know I've heard a dozen times during the testimony today how fraud-free this system is. Question, how do you know? It's totally anonymous. It's totally devoid of checks and balances. I'm saying that unless you change things where proof of ID really becomes proof of eligibility, as spelled out in the Oregon Constitution, Article 2, Section 5, you must be a citizen and you must be 18 years of age, I don't know why the system is considered fraud-free. It's open, and it mightn't be an opposing party that can manipulate the system. It could be a hostile group that comes in and manages to change the outcome of who is making the laws. Bear in mind that when people apply for a passport, they are asked where they're born. They're asked for the number of their naturalization certificate. They're asked questions and they're asked for documentary proof. Most people use that passport for pleasure reasons, and yet when we register to vote, it's for affecting the outcomes of laws and who it is that's making those decisions. So that I really do not understand. I also have a real concern about the ballot drop sites being unattended and that there's only attendance there on the last day. We have people deputized by the elections officials to go and pick up the ballots, yet no record is made of how many ballots they picked up, how many they delivered, when they delivered them, whether they delivered the total amount that they picked up. It's all an honor system. And then there's the system of voter intent. You were told how well it was arranged with the observers. The closest Sharon and I were to any election board table was 10.5 feet. We sat behind crime scene tape. And we did not know who it was that was sitting at the election board table. And we do know that it wasn't a Republican and a Democrat at each table. Some tables, because in Washington County it was 3 to an election board, sometimes it was 2 Democrats and 1 independent. And a lot of them are elderly people that want to get along. So this situation that we're relying on them, and no supervisor goes to see that it's credible what they've decided. And certainly the observers were only allowed 1 demonstration time in the morning, and if there was somebody new in the afternoon, We could not go up there and be witnesses to the decision that this was a voter intent. I'm telling you, from start to finish, this situation, this system, is open to manipulation, and you don't change it. I don't know where you've got the confidence in the outcome at upcoming elections. I've said my say. Thank you.
Ruth, I appreciate you taking the time to come down here, and I very much appreciate that. I've got your email, all 4 brief. 3 pages of it. I'm working on the answers as we speak. I hope you'll indulge me just a little time to respond back to your request. But I have them. The committee has them. We're working on the response. I will tell you that in deference to the committee and their time, I know that members have places that they have to go. There are several functions tonight, which is why we try to keep on a tight time frame. The 2 remaining folks that we have to testify, Kathy, I would hope that we have your written testimony.
You do. There's just 3 comments I'd like to make.
And I want to hear them.
We're very much concerned and interested in the financing of the voter's pamphlet.
I'm sorry?
The financing of the voter's pamphlet.
Okay.
It's an incredible publication, 100 years, that's what the voters depend on for their information. So there is a bill to propose how that might be funded and become self-sustaining. I hope you will give it good consideration. The other thing that both the Secretary and John Lindbeck referred to is the $700,000. It's absolutely essential to get our centralized voter registration, those two pieces of money. The other thing I would like to point out to you is that, and Ms. Bendel has always referred to one of them, under a vote by mail, we think there needs to be more security for the unofficial ballot drop sites. We think there needs to be continued vigilance to prevent fraud, even though there's no documented evidence of fraud, and consideration of some system to verify whether or not a mailed ballot has been received. So you can read that, but we're very much concerned about the financing issues.
Appreciate that. Thank Sharon, you. If you'll indulge the committee, I think 4 minutes as last time would be great. Thank you.
Good evening, all of you. My name is Sharon Cornish. I live in Hillsboro. I've been active 30 years in politics as a volunteer, not a paid volunteer, a volunteer. I was at elections from beginning to end every day. And I was there 21 hours on election night. I know what's going on. I don't have anything against Washington County staff, from the courthouse clear to elections department. It's not the people, it's the process. The women that were up here, the woman that sat on the right, I didn't get her name, but she spoke about cleaning up all this when we centralize with either a driver's license or with the last numbers of your Social Security. Do any of you know what happened in Washington County when the DMV of the state set up satellite DMEs? Do any of you know? 40,000 bogus driver's licenses were issued. 40,000. You can't use driver's license to clean this up. There's too many out there that we can't retrieve that are illegal. These people are before the courts in Washington County, and they will be tried in April on racketeering, on signing other people's names, on using money illegally. Now, this is not a safeguard to clean up people who haven't registered properly. And there's a lot of ID theft. A lot of ID theft. Even your Social Security won't guarantee that. What you need is on the front of the registration. Everybody should have to re-register with proof of citizenship and ID. We cannot rely on what's out there. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here, and I thank you for the committee's patience, and appreciate you guys coming all the way down to testify. With that, the committee will break tradition and adjourn at 6:08. Thank you.
You still have some free time for the early class meeting.